right. They are playing our theme music, which means it is time to start the Aging Well Together show. Welcome back. First live show we've had in a few weeks. Today's show is going to be wonderful. Features a returning guest. We have writer, psychotherapist, musician, and podcaster Hugh Willard is here to tell us all about his new book, Finding Beauty in the Gray, Stories and Verse from the Third Age. I'm excited to catch up with you. We have so much to talk about. But before we dive into our show, as always, we want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the ridiculously helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. See, I changed it. That's I used good. To say the fabulously helpful or wonderful. I changed it last night to ridiculously right. helpful. Please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories. Sorry, moving the mic. About the opportunities for Aging Well Together. You can catch us live every Thursday from 2 to 3 or stream us live through WCOMFM.org. Or you can listen to any of our previous shows, aka now our podcasts, through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is, get your pens and paper ready, www.orangecountync.gov/aging. It's long, but it's pretty clear, orangecountync.gov/aging. On this website, you can find links to our Aging Well Together radio show, as well as a host of other helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina. For those of you, we now have a national audience, I'm learning. So if you want to learn more about what's happening in Orange County, North Carolina, you can go there. And if you have questions about any of the resources we discuss on our shows, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can either call the Department on Aging at, get your pens ready, 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. And I will tell you, this is the first time Alicia and I have seen each other for a little while. We got four topics in 24 hours. Four different groups connected with me and said, we want to come on the show. Oh, wow. We're getting a little bit of a following.
And that's funny. I had at least two today.
Oh, see, people want to come on our Aging Well Together show. And today, I will say, it's a special, I'll introduce Alicia. My fabulous co-host is back with us.
Ed McMahon.
My Ed McMahon, Alicia Reed, who is one of the wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging. She's also host of her own show, Afternoon Talk with Alicia, that comes on right after. Hey, Alicia, you want to guess what show is this for you and me?
Oh.
Do, 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 do. Ooh.
Are we in 30s?
We just hit 30. Okay. We're 30. We're now like mature, right?
Oh,
yay!
My goodness.
We're 30. It's our 30th show.
Goodness.
And technically, it's our, I think, 32nd.
Because
I think
you recorded
did
two. Some.
We have 30 recorded shows, and there were two that you did when I was out that we did not record. Oh. So it's our 30th recorded show. 30th podcast,
good
I guess
down.
We can
that
say.
That means we're no longer new. We're just making it happen.
We are now in our more mature, right?
That's
once you
right.
hit 30. We were just
yeah.
talking about children's ages. Like, that's a legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So shout out to Alicia. Shout out to the Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet,
yay.
For allowing us to use their great music for our opening and closing music. You only heard it for a quick moment, but you will hear it a lot more at the end. And if you missed our last show 2 weeks ago, the Robert Bradford Quartet, RBQ as they are called, was here in the studio playing live music mm-hmm. and sharing stories about their experiences and inspirations. It was so awesome.
Where can you find them?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Miss Alicia. You can find it if you go to our website, www.orangecountync.gov/aging, and click on the Aging Well Together radio show. And you can listen, and it was great. They had music. My sound engineering could have been a little better, but they sounded great, and it was so great to learn all about them. I highly recommend it. So Welcome back to Alicia. We want to get all into Hugh. Let me first say, if you haven't figured this out already, I am your host, Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 53, I am now focusing on my own changing needs. So I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. My current aging need, Alicia, I made an appointment to get new glasses. My eyesight's getting all. Every year, I already have trifocals. You know, I already have progressive. So they have to keep adjusting it. Every year, I incrementally gain weight.
No, wait a minute.
And get worse eyes. You got to get me moving.
Yeah, we got to stop that. We don't want the weight gain.
I know.
The eye
I know.
Thing, we can work with that.
I have started. I couldn't do dry January. January because I had too many events and conferences and stuff. So I'm thinking about dry February. Hugh's looking at me. My
There is another one.
All right, wait, let's talk to Hugh. Let's get Hugh on the mic. He was like, should we do a mic test? I'm like, there's the way to mic test is just to have you start talking. But we have Hugh Willard back. Again, he has all kinds of descriptors. He's a writer, psychotherapist, musician, and podcaster with a passion for helping folks renew their sense of self and purpose in the second half of life. Hugh first joined us back September 14th to talk about the Creativity Expo that was taking place at our local senior center. Mm-hmm. But since then, Hugh has published, I was going to say right, but no, you've already written the book, but you published the book, Finding Beauty in the Gray, Stories in Verse from the Third Age. Aging Well Together show welcomes back Hugh Willard.
Yay! You know, I have a glasses story. Maybe that's a good way to mic check here.
Tell us your glasses story.
So I have been wearing, no one has heard of these, but now some folks are going to hear of this. I have been wearing these, they're called retainers. They're contacts that you put in and then you go to sleep. And then when you wake up, you take them out. And it sort of shapes the cornea and makes the light come in at the right angle. So 20/20 vision. I've been wearing these for 20 years. And they finally.
I have teeth retainers, like orthodontists. No idea.
These are eyeball retainers.
So I should have started this 20 years ago.
They're like semi permeable, kind of hard contacts. So they sort of grab and shape the cornea a little bit.
Everybody does LASIK. And they work?
2020. For 20 years I had these. Anyways, they kind of gave up the ghost. And for a few different reasons, I decided to go back to glasses. And I just got the glasses, these glasses that our listeners cannot see, but I'm pointing at.
They look really good. I really like them on you.
But see, I'm doing something kind of intentionally now. My head is bent to the side.
Yeah.
And that is because when I got the glasses, 2 days ago, I'm sitting there and the lady says, what do you think? You know, do they look straight? I said, I guess so. And she looked, she said, well, I think they're straight. And I get home and my partner, Heather.
Yes, I know your partner's got my name. I've got your partner's name.
Yeah.
Yes.
So she looked at me and she said, they're crooked. So, see, I mean, they...
Are they crooked?
Well, I guess.
Well, I'm wearing a headset now.
Well, yeah, so, and it's hard to know whether the glasses
are
crooked,
or your face. Like, I have an asymmetrical face.
Well, that's... I have an asymmetrical face, too. So you're like, is it my eyebrows or is it the glasses?
No question. They are crooked. When I looked at these things, it's like, so I'm going to go get these things adjusted.
But are they a single lens or are they trifocals like mine where any little change messes off my ability to see?
I'm still on the eyeball retainers.
Oh yeah, she's too.
I can tell they are crooked because I got this. Yeah, I can tell.
Listeners, Hugh Willard looks fantastic, and I really do like
the eyeball thing. It got me.
All right, Alicia's going to need
called,
a moment.
They're
to
called
read.
GVSS, Gentle Vision Shaping System.
Hmm. All right, clearly we
you
are not
Google
sponsored
it.
By anyone, but maybe
that's
we
just
should
a thing.
Get a
it's
good
not
sponsor
a brand. Yeah.
for. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Hugh, we want to talk all about the book, but before we get into that, remind our audience about you and how you got so many descriptors. How do you describe all of what has brought you into today?
That wow.
that
okay.
Easy question.
Many folks would describe me as laid back, type B, easy come, easy go.
You have that voice.
That's a fair description. But underneath that is this insatiable yearning for experiences and expansions and engaging in things. And music has always been a passion. Writing has always been a passion. Podcasting, I had no idea about until an agent approached me after reading my manuscript for Finding Beauty in the Gray. And she said, this would pair really well with a podcast. And I had no more thought about a podcast than the man on the moon.
Yeah.
But that's the way things are in the publishing world today. And you need to kind of facilitate and put together a platform and get your folks.
You got to brand yourself.
Get your people.
You
got to brand.
Hustle.
Wow.
So I started looking into it and connected with a good friend of mine who's much more techie than me.
Mm-hmm.
And off we go. And we're actually starting season three here. And we're in February now. We're starting season three in 2 weeks.
And tell our listeners what the name is of your lovely podcast. And yeah, that was a lead in for something fun.
Yeah.
Well, I'm borrowing off of the trademark from this show.
We are not trademarked on our Community Access government-sponsored show. Go on.
Aging Well, Finding Beauty in the Gray.
Well, look at that. Woo! And
like that.
His podcast was already in motion, and our show was already in motion, and we didn't know that until we met on air.
That's
and
right.
Went, wait a second,
wow.
We both have Aging Well shows.
Great minds.
We're aging well together, and you are aging well, Finding Beauty in the Gray. Though, here we are having our guests, and I'm not going to insult you, but I am going to critique you a little bit because I do not find beauty in the gray. I find beauty in the silver. As I like to say, I don't have gray hair. I have silver hair.
That works.
So I edited a little bit, which I call it finding beauty in the silver. So
well, I have a new what do you want to call it? A new part of the podcast, or in conjunction with the podcast, where I'm doing these senior moments to savor, and I do them on Thursdays.
I am
going for a rebrand on the whole senior moment, which has an association
as forgetting
and sort of doddering.
It's ageism term that people say.
Boom.
You don't
you
say you had a senior moment. You just say, hey, I forgot. You
there
know,
you go.
Not,
thank you.
Go.
Thank you.
But the point of your senior moment, though, was not about forgetting, was
it's,
it? Or what
it's
was
a rebranding.
About?
It's looking at the quality of experience and wisdom and insights. And so it's taking those senior moments and making them something very constructive, generative, positive. And by the way, the one that's out as of today on my social media stuff, I sort of stepped into it a little bit.
You do?
Oh my goodness, I took it on. I actually talked about the youth obsessed nature of our society and how we all want to look younger.
Wow.
And
you talked about this on your, so this is a second podcast or
this is a video.
It's a video.
Yeah.
Not
it's like a 5-minute video. That's just sort of in concert with the podcast.
Got
so.
It. And that's what, cause we're going to get back to the youth obsessed. So
right.
That's
yeah.
What the senior moment is
yep.
These video. And you
yep.
Talked about youth obsessed.
And the products and the hair color and the beard color
and
the hair growth
and the flat stomach
and the wrinkles
yes.
And you know the billion-dollar industries and the procedures. And I do take pains to say with respect, it's okay to want to look nice.
Right.
We need
well,
to be
yes.
Deliberate. We need to
right.
Be, if we are not conscious enough to consider why we're making these choices, we are unwittingly, to go to the word ageism that we're going to come back to,
right.
We are unwittingly buying into a message that says, I am not okay as I am.
Right.
I have
yes.
To change myself to be acceptable, and that is a problem.
That's a problem.
You know, we should have a whole show. Let's come back and have
talk
a whole
about
show
that
just
on my show.
Good for you.
You do. You talk about all these sort of bigger picture issues on that. You know, it is interesting because we are. I love the distinction between wanting to look young versus wanting to look good in your best
exactly.
Self. And it's like, yeah, I'm perfectly happy with my silver hair, but I do have a few wrinkles I don't love. And so it is more...
you can smile those away.
What?
You can smile those away.
You can smile. No, they come out when I smile. It's like they're... I'm certain wrinkles I really like of mine and others. But yeah, I think that's a good point. We want to look our best selves, and then that doesn't...
When you say our best selves, compared to?
Well, compared to, for me, it's just compared to how I used to look as opposed
to
I'm not going to look like.
Or the magazine or the.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to look like someone
girl.
On a.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've got all these things going, and any other background before we dive into about, because what's fascinating is I semi-joked last year on the show, and you're like, you're a psychotherapist. Are you taking? Oh. I was like, you taking more clients? Dun 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 dun. But I get my therapy for free on the mic with you, and you're like, no, clients are all booked up. Like you're kind of doing each thing at, I would say, 100%. You wrote a book, you got a podcast, you've got a big client. You know, you're not just doing the hustle of the Willard Show. You're clients. So are your clients like, no, let's talk about me? or you're like, this is a really good issue. Can I bring it on the show? Have you asked anyone to bring their drama onto your podcast?
No.
That'd be a great ethical moment.
Right, exactly.
I know we're confidential here, but would you mind telling all my listeners about your darkest...
We'll change the name to protect the innocent.
Change the name and we'll do one of those sort of voice distortion things,
yes,
right?
Yes.
No. We will... Nope, that doesn't.
I have great ideas. That's a really good. Okay, but so yeah. So the point is, all about, like, you're doing all these things. How do you decide? You and I were speaking off mic about the whole musician part of you, right, and that you were in a band. And so, how do you decide which Hugh gets the most energy? The therapist Hugh, the writer Hugh, the musician Hugh.
Well, at this point, yeah. At some point, it does come down to you just have to prioritize. And so that was what led to my my stepping away from the band after 10 years. So I just could not afford the time, the commitment. I couldn't do it, so I had to step away. That being said, music is too important in my life, so of course I still play at home. And my Heather, she and I will on occasion go out and play together. You know, she sings with me, and I sing and play guitar.
Oh, you're a performing couple.
We're Sonny and Cher.
Oh, I love
but,
that.
But better. We played over at Farrington Village last Friday. Yeah, it was a nice evening.
Is this
there.
Information on your website?
Yeah.
Well, it should be, but...
Okay. Okay.
But it's not right now, but
I mean,
it should be.
Funny.
We don't have any other gigs right now, but I'll be sure they do get posted on my site as we do. I can't chase gigs right now because I just don't have the time. Right.
Yeah, well, get your agent on that. Or me, because I was just meeting with folks. I'll be cryptic. We'll discuss some events in the fall that are going to be happening, but I was just meeting with folks right before this meeting, and they were looking for some musicians to be at a conference, and I was thinking I want to tell them about the Robert Bradford Quartet. What I love about them is I love their music, and I love that they are all seasoned.
Right.
Three out of the four in their 70s, one is in their 60s.
Beautiful.
I'm going to guess you're over than 50 yourself, I'm going to guess,
yep.
Over than 50?
Yes, I am.
So I just think having, and this is a aging-related conference, and I thought, well, I'd love to bring in some musicians that are, seasoned musicians. Mm-hmm. I can't find my words. All right, well, I could keep going all about your different passions, but you're here to talk about your book also.
But you didn't touch in on the cycle part.
The psychotherapist?
I'm a psycho.
All right. We do want some free therapy. What is your specialization within? How's that, Alicia? What do you specialize in? So Alicia and I know how to exploit your expertise.
There you go. And you won't be the first. So,
yes.
So I've been doing this pushing 35 years now, the last 20 plus in private practice. In general, my private practice, it is adults. And there actually has been a migration and evolution in the direction of older adults over the years, which was a part of the impetus for my interest in writing the book. And as far as the specific issues, so certainly issues related to aging, and oftentimes those are about identity, about loss, loss is in all manner, and we'll talk more about that, I'm sure. But so adjustment issues in life transitions, anxiety, depression.
So a lot of your clients, this is interesting, like legit interesting for people that have come to me in the past 2 weeks. I've had three different people ask me for therapists who specialize in older adult issues.
Not that many of us
and
are.
No. And so Seriously, are you? And so a lot of your folks are over the age of 50 or 60 and dealing yes. with, or even 70. Are you seriously not taking new clients?
Not. I so wish that I were able to, and I am bulging at the seams.
Yeah, it's a big issue. I was, Alicia, wow. our friends over at the Orange County Department on Aging, I was reaching out to the ridiculously wonderful aging transitions team, and so they're trying to keep a list, and they gave good advice, which is in some cases looking more for practices than individuals, so that way and then when you do find people, we're not going to have the whole other show about who's covered by which insurance plan, right. which
oh,
Medicare
goodness.
Advantage
right. Right.
So, okay. Alicia, any other questions? So
no, you covered them.
He would work with us. We're yeah. older.
Right. Well, okay. I'm much older than Heather. I'm 65. I get a
Wait, you're not
discount.
65 yet.
Well, I will be, so I'm just
calling. Are you? Because, wait, no, we need to have a party. We need to know, because you are
okay.
64.
Back to the guest.
Because you're
going to
win. Well, because at 65, my friend said, you know what you get? You get everything at 65. Like, that's, I can't wait to be 65.
I'm almost there.
Oh,
couple months.
All right, we're going to have to, okay, offline, we're going to plan a whole 65th radio show
no.
party with Alicia.
No.
Okay, so let's go in. Well, yeah, okay. Let's talk about the book.
Yes, let's do.
What, why, how, where, when, what motivated you? People say you shouldn't ask why questions because they're a hardball question. I don't care. It's perfectly fair. Why did you write the book?
Well, and in the book, would you refer to clients or just experiences with them?
I'll speak to that.
Oh,
so,
good question.
So the why. Yeah, so as I mentioned, the migration of my practice, more and more older folks. And so just my time with them, hearing about their experiences, in a way that dovetailed in with my interest in teaching. And so I connected with the folks at the great folks over at North Carolina State's.
The ridiculously wonderfully helpful.
The ridiculously wonderful, wonderfully helpful mm-hmm. folks at the North Carolina State Osher Lifelong Learning Institute.
Mm. Oh, Ollie.
Ollie.
We love the Ollie folks.
Ollie folks are all over the country
wow.
in different institutions. And here locally, they're at State. They're, at, well, for folks who are listening in the central North Carolina area.
Oh, my
area
mother loved. They would at Duke. They would
yeah.
have it. My old stomping ground at Carroll Woods, they would sometimes, mm. They yep. would host different retirement community senior centers, host the classes. Quick fun fact, at the Osher is national.
Yes.
And so at Brandeis in the Boston area where I went and where my mother's connected, they had Bali. And it was the Brandeis University, but in Boston area they had
Boston,
Bali.
Okay.
And so it was the Boston Ollie
yeah,
group. So
yeah.
it was called Bali instead of Ollie. Yeah, I thought that was fun. And my mom would do all the programs. Okay, go back. So Ollie classes.
Yeah, and so I've been with those good folks a couple years before the pandemic, and then we did virtual through the pandemic, and now we're back.
What did you teach? I wonder if my mom took any of your classes.
A whole handful of different things. And I'm actually teaching a class starting next Wednesday that is on grandparents and the relationship with their grandchildren.
Is it in person or virtual?
It's in person at NC State Ollie.
Because it's the NC State Ollie. Did you teach
yes.
any of the classes in Durham or Judea Reform used to host classes?
I guest lectured a couple of times at Duke, but that was virtual.
Okay.
And I did another one at the Asheville, which again, this was virtual with the Creative Center for Aging. In
yeah.
Asheville. I did go down to Georgia, to Athens, and did a class down there.
I mean, there is something about the move to more virtual options that the pandemic is that, you know, what was a real regional program, real local, and then you can do others. Okay, so somehow this leads to the book. So you were teaching these classes, because I could have a whole class now just on you
yeah.
and Ollie.
And again, you know, the very first class, well, course, you know, several classes that I did it a few times there, was looking at identity, meaning, relationships, and creativity in the third age.
And we're going to get to that, what that means in a second, but
yes.
okay.
And so that was my very first course at Ollie. And loved it. The folks there loved it.
I was like, was it sold out? Because it's hard to get into something. My mother kept
sold out.
She kept being too late to sign up, and then she'd get sold out.
And of course, that's exactly what this book is about. I've done some other courses there in the time since. Something on what's called the Enneagram, which is a personality inventory.
Oh yeah, I want to talk about that.
Yeah, I've done the grandparent stuff before. I've done some more.
How did you decide? So I wrote it down. Alicia, there's always that part of the show where you and I start writing things down. So I wrote that one down. Identity, meaning, relationships, and creativity. How come those four? Mm-hmm. And then we'll get to the book.
Yeah. Well, so that came out of my interactions with my clients primarily. And when I did some poking around to look at resources, and I, you know, wanted to, you know, avail to my clients, point them in the direction of some good resources, there weren't that many out there. Mm-hmm. Now you can, I'm trying to come up with some sort of cliche that talks about like shaking a stick or throwing something at something and stuff comes out of the woodwork.
But I like it.
You know, I'm making some up here. Anyways, the
unintended consequences is not as fun and sexy.
Well, you know, if you want to look up something for aging resources, and this is your bailiwick, so
yes.
But if you go out into the wide, wide world, you're going to get a ton of things that are looking at the financial preparedness,
right.
Getting yourself in the right posture to be happy in retirement.
I see where you're going. Financial or in-home support, like the real.
Or
like,
that.
Or cremation.
Yeah.
Yes,
but
okay.
You're not going to get this wide swath of time and experience where folks need support in how do I engage this time of my life where I have, for many folks, not everyone, but for many folks, they have a surplus of time if they're coming out of career.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Children, if they had children that are out of the home doing their thing. And, you know, we just have these bland, sorry for that descriptor, but sort of generalized ideas about what are you going to do?
Yeah,
well,
I'm going to
travel. I'm going to play golf. I'm going to maybe volunteer. But those things, they're not viscous enough. They're not sticky enough. They don't give us. They're not differentiated. They're not deliberative enough to understand or to think about who am I now? Mm-hmm. What matters to me? Mm-hmm. Because those things, you know, that's what we need to explore. And as we have more sense of that and more integration of that, that's going to help us in our choice making in all manner of direction. So that's where I went with
that. I love that. And we were just talking about this around the dinner table last night. I was talking with some family members who I was talking to Dad, you know, who's still working, and this whole issue of, you know, when people stop working, how do they fill their time? Mm-hmm. Who, you know, who does hobbies? Who gets involved with, you know, spends more time with their pets? Who spends more time volunteering? Who spends time with their faith community? Mm-hmm. We were just talking about all the different or more physical fitness, like golf and stuff like that. So anyway, we were just talking about, and we land on, but what would make, you know, what has meaning and what makes you happy, and then, you know, so fascinating. So I love that, because you're right, you don't really see that come up enough.
It's happening more and more now, which I'm thrilled about, but we're still a long ways to go.
Watch this segue. You guys are going to be so proud of me. Well, now, thanks to the book that you wrote and thanks to good search engine optimization, SEOs, if they look this up, they might find your book. So you wrote a book. Is it it's funny, and you talk about how it's not a self-help book. So it's not a how-to guide. So what is this book?
Yeah, I have a little fun with that in the very beginning of the book in the author's note.
Yeah, I see that. It says, you mentioned the author's note, this is not a self-help book. And is this true? Were you being sarcastic? It is.
Well, it's a different form. Once again, with respect to the many self-help books across many important issues and populations and needs, there often is a way that they tend to be a bit boilerplate. They tend to identify said issue, give brief anecdotes, go into the the research and the best practices, and as a validation to what they are espousing.
I've read those
espousing.
Books before,
I have a few.
Yes, and there's some good ones. There's some good ones.
That part of my, you know.
There's some good ones, but another way to think about this is when we have too much of that, it just becomes kind of white noise. It becomes background. How well do people track?
You know, we're right after the first of the year, so we should be exercising more. We shouldn't be drinking so much. We should be eating better.
Yes.
And we should deal with this, find more meaning in our life. And
we should.
And gratitude journals. And this is all good. But like the list of the, okay, so go on.
So in a manner, it is.
Editorializing.
In a manner, it is self-help, but let's use that term in a very broad frame. So, you know, from the beginning of time, beginning of, you know, when language came into being, even before written language, you know, so the way we made meaning out of our experiences was to tell stories.
Yes. Okay.
And that's how we could explain our experience and have other folks potentially relate to it. And as our brains got a little bit bigger, we got into some more abstract thinking. And now we're starting to use metaphors and similes and, you know, and all these are ways to help us integrate quality of experience. Right. So we are storytellers. That is a part of our brain. And you know, we do it in different forms. It's not always in written word. But we convey our experience through story. Okay, so that's what I do in this book. I couldn't leave well enough alone, so I added in some of my poetry as well. Another form.
He's also a poet.
Who knew it?
Another form of storytelling.
Renaissance-y, yes.
So so that that's the structure. Those are the components of the book. Mostly stories that are, of course, aligned with the salient issues for folks who are in the third age, the second half of life, looking at those issues of identity, meaning the relationships factors at this point, and also creativity, a whole section on that.
I was going to say, do you literally, we talked about it a little bit beforehand, some of the questions that I would ask, and one of them is the structure of the book. So do you structure it around those themes?
There are three sections to the book. Now, there's an author's note on the beginning, and there's an epilogue at the end, so we kind of set it up, wrap it up. In between, there are three sections, the first being looking at identity and meaning. The middle section is relationships, and the third section is on creativity, which is this wonderfully abstract word, and some people either embrace it or they run screaming into the hills away from it because they feel they don't match up to it. And I really want to disabuse everyone of any kind of notion that they are not creative, because we all are inherently creative.
I think this is where we do a shout out to your previous coming on the show. I'm so sorry I didn't write the number down. It was September 14th. It's on the website to list, and it's listed under Creativity Expo. And that whole show is with you and your friends and colleagues that joined us to talk all about why creativity is so important and how. So if people want to dive more into creativity, get the book and listen. If you want to listen to Hugh Moore, you can.
There you go.
There you go. There's. So that's how you structure the book, and then you tell stories within each, and then do you have lessons learned, and then is there a whole?
No, it's really. I just let those essays, those stories, I just let them be there and let folks come to them as they do and take what they will take from them and allow their own sort of integrative process. Some essays are going to speak to some folks more than others, and that's going to align with what's going on in their experience and in their life. Some are universal. Some are, you know, they're going to speak to everybody. And the poems support the essays.
Sorry, clearly I'm looking at you like I'm going to ask a question. I realize I had my whole facial thing. My mouth was half open. I was like, I have a question. So it makes me think of a funny, I'm going to say this. My mother used to say, where do you come off? So like, but then you're, where do you come off? So do you have a whole section that talks about, like, do you reference your work with your clients? Like, are people like, Hugh, where do you come off giving all this advice? Why should we listen to you? Like, do you feel like you have to justify that? Clearly you don't have to on this microphone, but.
It's a nice mix. It's a nice amalgam of some stories from my clients. Of course, I do protect their identity, change just enough of the information so they don't, they're not, you know, recognizable. Also got their permission on the front side to do that, to have their, you know, their experience or part of their experience in the book. Some of them are my stories. Some of them are outside of my clinical office. So their interactions with colleagues or friends or some experience in some setting. So they come from all over. There are a couple of vignettes that are fictional. I wrote a couple that are just sort of stories because they were such a nice way to go after a particular point I was wanting to express and illustrate.
I was thinking about that structure of the typical self-help book or whatever, and they tell a story, and then they refer to something to try to give it validity. Like, we went to Gallup poll, and 100,000 people were asked this question.
That's in there. Right. That's in there.
Wow.
You know, the research.
Clearly, I haven't read it yet. I should have.
The research is in there. And so, yeah, there's some of those Gallup polls or this poll or this research.
And I do like that. I like statistics, and you like statistics.
I know. I love we have not had sexy statistics and fun facts for a while. We should pull that back.
Yeah, I try to be judicious, and so that they really, there's bang for the buck.
Yeah.
You know, you get too much, again, it's white noise.
And I fall into that. There's a part of me that I geek out on certain stats, and then none of them have any meaning, because I've given four stats and when I could have given one. But I think what's really powerful to me, though, is that this came up through your conversations with people. So you have some people write books because of their own experience, and that's wonderful and lovely. But that you've worked with so many people that...
over many years.
I was working with one of my interns yesterday. I have these college interns, and one of them is I think she's 21, so she's younger. And I was trying to, you know, give her professional/maternal advice. And my advice to her was, everyone's a hot mess. You know, everyone's a hot mess. And because I was trying to tell, somebody hadn't responded to her email, and I said, you know, please don't take that personal. When people don't respond to your email, it has nothing to do with you. Everyone's a hot mess. Everyone has so much going on. And so, you know, give them the grace. But that was my issue of, like, everyone's a hot mess. And you literally know that because they're paying you good money to explain how they are a hot mess. And so you get to, or going through hot messes, probably not therapeutically appropriate, that they're going through transition. And so did you write the book? I'm going to say, did you write the book as like a love letter to your clients or a love letter to people aging and wanting them to experience more positivity? I'm sad of how many people are struggling, and so I want to give them a path out? Like, I'm trying to think of all the different ways
That's a great question. And my sense of that.
That was my own question.
My sense of that is that With certainly knowing that I do not have all of the answers, I can clarify and point in the direction of exploration and the sense that this is going to be valuable, a process for you. And so, it's definitely in the direction of being generative and positive. Mm-hmm. It's to say, you know, it's I don't focus really too much on the negative side of things, but I do, it saddens me to know that folks have so many good years, and good is relative, and we can qualify in a lot of different ways based on limitations, but also strengths and capacities. But they're not empowered, or they don't know that there's so much more that they can be doing that would give them a better experience, and they can be happier. But they're not aware of it. So I want to say, hey, just think about some of these things and spend some time with this, and I'm confident that you're going to feel better. Mm-hmm. And we are, and the whole ageism thing, you know, we're out to pasture, right? You know, you passed a certain age, it's like, okay, yeah, expiration date is coming, just sit around and wait for it.
Yeah.
No. There's too much that they have to offer for themselves and for their loved ones and the larger community. We all need.
Yeah. And I want to continue on these themes, but I realize one of the questions, you've said it a few times, but one of the questions you and I talked about describing was, what do you mean by the third age? And then I want to get into it, because you've used that term a few times when people are in this second half of life, or in this other transition, or this time of searching and meaning over a certain age. What is the third age?
Yeah, and sometimes I they're not interchangeable, but sometimes I will interchange those phrases just to help people, because most folks are going to be more familiar with the second half of life.
Yeah.
The problem with that, once again, is that sort of implicit ageism.
Your downward trend.
Yeah, it's right all downhill from here. Right. It's that implicit ageism that says, yeah, you know what's going down. So that's where I'm pushing in this phrasing of third age. And so the consideration is that there are four ages. And there was a French...
Get your pen. Alicia, we got our pens. Four ages. All right,
there was a French gentleman a number of years back who coined the term the third age. And
I've heard it before, yes, but that's okay.
But anyway, so generally speaking, a lot of the developmental psychologists and researchers, you know, they focus in the early years. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, the baby, toddler, all the way up to adolescence.
And
so much is happening, right? So it's understandable that mm-hmm. there's a lot of attention and research given to that time. So that's the first age. Yep. Second age
like
is really...
0 to 20 kind
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, okay. Right in there. Second age is this time in adulthood where you're moving into this sense of productivity in whatever form that takes with mm-hmm. vocation or family or both. Or so it's that sort of... producing, earning wages.
I call it the acquiring phase, like you're acquiring stuff, acquiring people, acquiring pets, acquiring houses, acquiring debt, material objects, just acquiring.
Yeah. So that's that. It's a very expansive time. The third age. And it's not, again, because there's so much variety here, but the idea is that for folks who do have families, children, typically, exceptions noted, typically those kids are flying the nest and doing their thing.
When you were talking before, real quick, about all your different identities, I am 6 months in almost of empty nesting.
There you go.
I became an empty nest mid-August.
Oh, yeah. There you
and
go.
I do, when you're like, I was like, how do you get to do all those things? I'm like, oh, yeah. I do feel this freedom now. So, yeah. And it's funny, I was putting ages. It's like 0 to 25 is the first age around, right? Mm-hmm. Second age probably is like 25 to 55, whatever.
55, 60, yeah. Right? Yeah.
And then, 50, so I'm now officially rocking the third age, right?
Yeah.
So empty nester. Okay, yeah. Go on.
And again, also it's for some folks who are winding down career, or maybe they have stopped career. But again, there's variability in there.
Okay.
The thing that I would say that is mostly defining for the third age, again, exceptions noted, is freedom and loss. And it's a pretty wide-spanning time.
That got kind of deep on us, Alicia. Yeah. Freedom and loss.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wide-spanning time. Yeah.
And when your daughters left, I remember you. It was sad.
It was? I was sad?
Yeah, you...
I think I was sad for not being sad. I was like, don't let the door hit. Yeah. No, it was.
It was sad. And it was emotional, you know, because it's freedom. Now you're probably experiencing freedom, but it was.
And the freedom, you know, at a minimum, we're talking about time. You have more time. Mm-hmm. Again, depending
That's
on choices
the big
that you
thing.
Make.
More time.
Yeah. But then there's loss. And mm-hmm. as we move further into third age, there is loss of. Purpose that was associated mm-hmm. with the wage earning years and, you know, the career years.
That sense of identity. And I've watched
loss
other
of identity.
Friends went through it different than me, I think, because I was restarting a career when my kids mm-hmm. left. But I think for others, this the whole mom thing, like, what am I supposed to do?
Who are you now?
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's
right. Yeah,
and for me as a caregiver, when my mom passed mm-hmm. away, I was doing such intensive caregiving that it took me a while to get over my identity as a caregiver, you know, for when your loved
and
one
some
passes
people,
away.
Yeah, and some people, you know, they leave work, and those work relationships are pretty integral. They're pretty essential. And, you know, there can be certainly the intention, we're going to get together and have lunch and anything. And sometimes that works, and sometimes those things start to sort of unevenly fade away. Mm-hmm. So there's loss with that. If there's a relocation, a movement, there's loss. And then, of course, there are deaths that start to come in. So there's loss and there's freedom. And it's how do we... You know, that's where we have to know ourselves and who am I at this point? You know, what matters to me? And then how does that drive choices I make in the face of these experiences?
Well, I'm still brainstorming. I think the other big loss to add to that is both the physical and cognitive. So I've watched folks and even in my own family, when you go through physical changes and then that big plan to, well, I'm going to play tennis or I'm going to do golf or I'm going to travel. And all of a sudden the physical issues that have happened mm-hmm. put it's either, you know, you can't do those things anymore.
Right.
You have to do a modified or travel takes a lot more thought in different ways to make it accessible.
Yes.
Or then when there's cognitive changes. So sorry, mm-hmm. I was still kind of on. So So that's the third age. So there's the freedom and the loss, and people are just aging into these. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a pretty wide spanning period of time, particularly in this day and age we have all of the advances in medical technology and procedures.
55 to 95.
It can be. I don't think there's a hard stop on the backside of that, particularly when we define the fourth age. And the fourth age.
I was going to say, what's the fourth age?
Yeah, the fourth age is really the summing up, the full integration of life, the looking back over that time. It's not a period of inactivity by any means, but it is much closer to the time of death.
What is it? The self. Is it Kierkegaard or Maslow? The self-actualization.
Maslow.
That's
right.
Maslow. You know, you've kind of hit it done, and but that's probably still part of the third age. But really, when you're in retrospective,
yeah, and that tends to be shorter, you know, for sure. And it's
when I could see some people, especially like if you have a diagnosis and it's like a quick diagnosis of a terminal issue, that fourth age might be like a few weeks.
Very short. Yeah. And then you have super agers who are out there, you know, wearing the track suits and running around and playing pickleball and, you know, going to concerts, and they're not in the fourth age.
Yeah, my dad's a super ager professionally, so he doesn't mind me saying he's 86 and he's still working almost full time. And hey, what are you holding up there, Alicia? Alicia's
super
holding
agers.
Something.
The super agers, they're doing senior games.
Literally the senior games. Yeah, super ager, the senior
they're
games.
They're doing all that, and they're 85.
They're still third agers. Yeah,
89.
Doing their thing.
All right. Well, I want to make sure we are giving, and you know what we haven't done yet about the book is for those people who want to learn more about Hugh, I love your website because it's really easy. HughWillard.com, right?
Yes.
HughWillard.com.
Yes.
And that's where you can find out about all of these things. When I went, and then you also have, I don't know if we want to add, we're going to go back to talking, but I realize I meant to do that earlier. If people want to continue on learning about you and your interests and getting the book. Is that the or should they also go to the www.findingbeautyinthegray.com?
Those are two different websites. So the HughWillard.com. But you know, HughWillard.com is one-stop shopping.
I know, because I was looking up the book stuff last night, and I actually liked going to it from your main website to the books, because then you get a lot more. Or you can
You can access all my books there. And in fact, the podcast, which is the findingbeautyinthegray.com.
Yes.
That's the podcast website.
That was the podcast. And I went there first. Yes. I'm like, but wait, I want the book. Yeah.
But you can also see my podcasts on HughWillard.com.
Yes.
The thing about that is that I think they just put the, I don't know, like the most recent five or six. So if you want the full library, and I do encourage that, go back because there's a lot of great topics, a lot of great guests, including Heather Altman.
I was on his show.
So go to the findingbeautyinthegray.com because then you can see the whole catalog, the whole library of shows over the full time.
Okay, wait, this can be... I keep interrupting you. I'm
You're
so excited. This is our sexy statistics and fun facts. Here we go. I got two statistical things, which, Hugh, all about you. The questions will be, and I'll just tell you now, how many podcasts have you had, and how many books have you written? That was a stumper of a question.
Two seasons of podcasts. I think I'm not including all the recordings that have been done for season three. I think we're 75 plus podcasts at this point.
Nice.
And I have written, including this most recent, my first nonfiction book, which is this one, Finding Beauty in the Gray. My previous books, I have written a total of six. So five books prior to then the others.
That's six more books than I've written.
Oh, my gosh. More than I've written.
Okay. So wait. Because I know we want to go back about finding. Okay, but tell us about the other books are fiction books, because you said this is my first nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. That's just my itch to be creative, and I love writing. So, and just sort of following along in some respects with my kids as they came up through the years growing up. And my youngest is they both love to read. My youngest all the way through, you know, just read. So I would typically read stuff with them. And so I started out with a children's chapter book series, did three books in that with a indie publisher, and then went to YA, which...
The young adult.
Young adult.
I know
young
the adult, lingo.
And did two books of that. But I have always just felt like my home is in nonfiction. And now I'm here, and you're not going to pull me away. I'm not saying I won't write fiction anymore, but I just...
Because you want to say what it is, not right. but it's not. I just made up a song. I don't know how to verify that. I have a hard time with fiction. I think after I went back as a student later on in life a few years ago, and I'm like, if I'm going to be reading and putting that kind of effort into reading, because I'm a big TV watcher and article reader magazines, if I'm going to be reading something, I want it to be, like, true.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't know. There's something about it. Or I'm
it's
into
not
historical
that kind of entertainment, you know.
Yeah, I feel like, and I know so many people don't agree with me, and I do get into a good book every once in a while when I last read 1,000 years ago. But yeah, there is something about reading, productive reading, mm-hmm. and I feel like nonfiction or even maybe historical fiction where I'm mm-hmm. getting. But yeah, I don't. Okay, mm-hmm. all right. So you've written a ton of books. This book. Because we were excited to have you come on. I want to make sure that you've been able to tell us about anything about the book that you want to tell us about. So you've talked about its structure. You talked about what Third Age, stories and verse from the Third Age, and anything else. We haven't talked much about the title. I mean, you kind of, it's aging well. You've been using this Beauty in the Gray or Beauty mm-hmm. in the Silver, as I have edited. Mm-hmm. Where did you come up with that? I mean, it's kind of self-evident, but...
Well, self-evident, and how did it pop into my brain? Yes. I'm not sure that I could tell you. Stuff is popping all over my head much of the time. So I don't, you know, I it just came to me. I it's been so long ago. You know, I started writing this on the front side of the pandemic, so...
Oh, yeah, I didn't ask that question because it just got published in the last few months. But how long did it take you to write the book? And that's a great. I'm not a writer, so I don't know from this.
You just set it up on a tee for me. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, so many times, and there's an essay in the epilogue about this and how, you know, oftentimes it's talked about with someone writing a song and they wrote this song in 10 minutes on a cocktail napkin right. in the back corner of a restaurant. And that's great. And I don't want to, you know.
You two did that with their song 40, go on. Yeah.
Well, but, you know, I push back on that. And I don't mean to be too snarky about this, but when you say, how long
snarky
did it take?
Yeah.
And you say, how long did it take me to write this book? It took me basically the entirety of my conscious life because everything that, even the phrase finding beauty in the gray, where did that come from? Well, in some ways, it's a function and a product of all of my history and all my experience mm-hmm. and how I've engaged that. And it sounds a little bit like a cop-out answer.
No.
So
in material,
you know, just really kind of clock in, clock out hours kind of thing. I suppose it took me a little over a year. In and out of my other
Well, it's hard to know, because that's a good point. Someone can say, well, it took me a year, but I worked on it for 1 hour every 2 weeks, as opposed to I sat and did nothing for 300 hours.
Right.
And, yeah,
or
so
I've been sitting in my office listening and talking with clients, and that has been the germ, you know, kind of the seed for me to think about things, and they end up in my book, right? You know?
So a few months ago, I was helping out on, you know, Grateful Dave. We love Grateful Dave, the station manager now of WCOM. And he has a music show, and he interviews musicians. And there was a woman, I can't remember her name, I'm so sorry. She came in, and she used to be a therapist. And her music, she's a singer-songwriter, kind of a folk music, kind of a Bonnie Raitt sort of sound. I keep thinking about her because when I'm thinking about you, because rather than writing a book, she wrote a series of songs mm-hmm. based on what she saw. And she worked with young adults, so it's mostly teenagers and the kind of struggles they were going through and the issues that it brought up in from her teenage life. So anyway, it is interesting how you therapists, talk about storytellers, since you are sort of a repository of other people's stories, right?
We are.
And then how you share that back in a respectful, confidential, anonymous, well, not confidential, but an anonymous way.
Yes. Would that be like your poems and your music? Where you're telling those stories?
Well, and they're either informed by other people's things or my own. Mm-hmm. Poems more often are going to be my working out my own sort of processes, mm-hmm. not exclusively, but more often that,
All right, so we have a few minutes left. And in our few minutes left, I want to hear about the future Hugh. Mm-hmm.
Future Hugh.
That was kind of fun. Which is either themes that we should be attending to, things coming up in your podcast, issues that you're kind of mulling around for your next book. Like, what should we be on top of us who are also looking to find beauty in the gray? What are the big issues?
Trends.
So, well, just real quickly about the podcast, I'm super excited for the third season that will be starting February 13th. Mm-hmm. I have a really fun couple on. They wrote a book about getting together later in life.
Mm-hmm.
They found each other through silver singles. There you go, back with the silver. So
love it.
And it's fun, and they wrote a book. It's fun couple. And so a lot of great guests coming on this year. I'm just excited to keep rolling with this. For me, let's just throw another log on the fire
let's
here.
Let's do it.
I am in the middle of a graduate program. I am getting my MFA in creative nonfiction through Bay Path University in Massachusetts.
Whoa! I mean, yeah, okay. Yay, you! There's a part of me that's like, I'm so happy for you, but don't people who do MFAs and then they write a book? But you're already an experienced writer, both in fiction and now nonfiction.
Yes.
So you were craving some initials, because I feel like you already have a lot of initials.
What I'm craving is I have been a therapist for 35 years.
Yes.
And it is time for the next chapter. Let's say
pun intended. Intended.
Next chapter. And so I want to teach. I want to teach writing.
Oh, so that's why you need you some initials.
I need
some
me
more
some
initials. You already master's in counseling and therapy.
Yes, I do.
Because I did want to call you Dr. Willard. The first show, I actually, when I went to put you on the website, I said Dr. Willard, and then I went, wait. It's not Dr. Willard. It's still fabulous. So I was looking at your degrees.
It's Lord Willard.
It's Lord.
I bought me one of those one-tenth of a...
Did you really?
No, I'm joking.
Oh, that's fun. But okay, so you're getting this MFA. Go on. So our big theme...
Yeah, I am so interested in getting into academia and teaching, and I want to teach writing. So I'm doing this. I'm halfway through. I'm actually doing an internship now at a local college, and I'm going to be... Yeah, I'm gonna move into teaching and move
it's
away
so
from the therapy.
It's so well needed.
We're all storytellers, so we need to have support in doing that.
Well, and they see me looking down because you are so living out that sense of those four big issues: your own sense of identity, your own sense of meaning, your own sense of relationships, and your own sense of creativity.
Yep.
I love that.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I hate to say it, but it is time to end our Aging Well Together show. Everyone, please go to HughWillard.com so you can learn more about Hugh, our second time coming on the show. And before we went on the mic, Alicia, we were already talking about a third show that we want Hugh to come on to play music. Now we've had the live band play. We can have...
And you can bring Heather.
And I
the other Heather.
Bring the other Heather. And I can talk about the... And this is in the book as well. There's a section, a little essay about music and a poem. I can talk about the value and throw in some statistics the value of music for all of us, any age, but certainly for folks in the third age and beyond. It's health benefits. It's cognitive benefits.
Yeah.
We can talk about it. We can play music. We can do all of it.
Okay. So thank you, Hugh, for coming back. Good
thank
luck with the book.
Me.
Everyone, buy the book. And thank you, our listeners. And we've got a whole big, a whole month of great shows. So stay tuned for us next week. And thank you.